Today, artificial intelligence is being used to do things which are hard for humans to do because of data. There's a lot of reasons to think that this kind of intelligence, as we say, will allow things which are either repetitive or require deep pattern analysis will be much, much better. I see it as extraordinarily useful.
The earthquake, you know, small and medium size, it's rather an everyday event in Japan. The economy is likely to go back to normal with minimal damage.
On trade, I am going to issue a notification of intent to withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a potential disaster for our country. Instead, we will negotiate fair bilateral trade deals that bring jobs and industry back onto American shores.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Tuesday, November 22nd, 2016, 5:08. Good morning. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day as we hit Tuesday of Thanksgiving week. Lots to talk to you about. We'll have more on the decision by President Trump, as we expected, to pull out of the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We'll have also some reaction to that. A new book is out about globalism, truly global, and the benefits and negatives of being global. We'll talk with the author of that, a very timely conversation this morning, all coming up after we check the WGN market desk by Associated Bank this morning. Around the globe this morning, generally negative results in terms of indices in Europe and in Asia this morning. We're seeing positive U.S. Dow futures this morning as we try to get our computer to refresh here just a little bit. Got to feed the chipmunks overnight. Didn't do that this morning. Your Dow futures look like they're up 51 points, although I can't be sure. I don't think my computer is updating here. And in Europe this morning, we're seeing generally positive signs. Asia this morning, also generally positive. Again, not sure that my computer is updating here, so we'll move on. Tell you a little bit about what's happening with some of the other indices. Also this morning, the dollar gained against the yen and the euro on Wall Street yesterday. All three major indices closed at record highs. The Dow rose 88 points, just about a half a percent to 18,956. The S&P gained as well, and the NASDAQ added a few points as well, 47 points to be exact. Asian shares rose today, tracking the rally on Wall Street as oil prices pushed higher amid hopes of an incoming production cut deal from the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, otherwise known as OPEC. For the last couple of weeks, we've been waiting to see how this all plays out, but it looks like we might now actually see a production cut deal coming on oil. This morning, oil is trading generally higher, up just about a dollar a barrel on world markets this morning. Well, you've heard there in the opening montage, Donald Trump making no bones about what he said he would do during the campaign, that is withdraw or cancel the Trans-Pacific Partnership agreement. He's saying that he will issue a notification of that as soon as possible. And it brings to idea this notion of globalism. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? There's a new book out called Truly Global, The Theory and Practice of Bringing Your Company into International Markets. And the author is Anna Schlegel. She's with us this morning by telephone. She's, again, written a book called Truly Global, The Theory and Practice of Bringing Your Company into International Markets. And she's with us this morning. Anna, what were you trying to accomplish by your book here?
Sure. So you're right. There's a lot of anti-globalization ideas right now being thrown around the debates. The book that I wrote, Truly Global, looks at how any company, it's not necessarily U.S. companies, but how any company around the world can take the business around the world or can enter international markets. There is, today's economy is very borderless, and so every company wants to grow beyond the boundaries. And so globalization is a way to do that.
And so this negative connotation of globalization, mm-hmm. where did it come from, and why is it getting so much traction?
Yeah, I mean, globalization is not a new thing. I mean, we've been, you know, globalization has been around for centuries. It's not a new concept. the negative traction, I think, from what I'm seeing a lot in the media, especially around the U.S. elections, and not necessarily just the U.S. elections, but you saw what just happened in Belgium and Canada, where they stopped the agreements, is people feel that, and it's happening to every single company that I've worked on, is we are outsourcing our jobs, we are offshoring our jobs, specifically, you know, a lot of work around the IT industry, manufacturing, right? We have seen car manufacturing going into Mexico. And so it threatens our livelihood, and that becomes too close to home, and nobody likes to see that.
Well, as you write, as you write in your book, though, the opposite is really true. It's really an opportunity for entrepreneurs, big and small, companies big and small, to make a profit and grow.
That's right. Yes, what I'm trying to say is it's happening. You know, the economy is borderless, so go and take advantage of that. So how are you going to do this? And then you do see some companies actually that stay and that invest in the States. I mean, if you look at Apple, they are about to finish their headquarters, a new headquarters in Cupertino. They are just now signing up for more land in San Jose. So this book is trying to explain how can you ensure that your company is successfully globally, because you do, if you're a visionary, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're a startup, you want to make money, you want your business out there, and one way of doing that is to get out of your own borders. And so people go for it, and you have to jump on that wagon.
Anna Schlegel is the author of Truly Global, The Theory and Practice of Bringing Your Company to International Markets. We'll continue our pre-dawn conversation with her on The Opening Bell as we continue here.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. This morning we're talking with Anna Schlegel. She's the author of a new book called Truly Global, The Theory and Practice of Bringing Your Company to International Markets. Timely conversation this morning, given the latest developments with TPP. President-elect Trump saying he'll withdraw from that immediately as his White House takes office. Anna, we were talking before the break about how companies can profit and expand their base and what they do by going global. What's the first step that some of these companies should take if they do decide to go global, if they're not there now?
Sure. So you're right. There's a lot of anti-globalization ideas right now being thrown around the debate. So my advice always is to have the higher levels, the executives at the company, put a plan around this. What are the countries that need to be investigated, that need to be assessed for the first steps into globalization? So you can put a country plan that is, you know, you can think big, but you can start small. And so you can try out certain products into certain countries. And I think the first step is to come up with this set of countries. And then what is it that's going to take a company to be successful in this set of countries? So I always advise to go into smaller set of countries then you need to break it down. Are you going to have to open a legal entity? Do you need to open offices? Is your business going to be done through digital? If it's just done through digital, what are your return policies? And so you need to start envisioning the round trip for your product to make it from your offices into these countries that you're trying to penetrate. And so, for example, you're going to pretend that you're a customer that needs to play, download, upgrade, return your product.
This all sounds very daunting. And let's say we do want to pick a country. How extensive is this? Should we learn a language, a different language? Should we learn everything we can? Should we go to school? What would your advice be?
It all depends on the product that you're trying to sell, right? If you're selling necklaces online, it has nothing to do with if you're selling a massive, you know, operating system that has 1 billion lines of code. So the book that I wrote, Truly Global, is more looking at the IT space, the Silicon Valley, the big giants, you know, that are going globally. And so the exercise can be very daunting, but I am talking about enterprises that are multi-billion-dollar enterprises. And so they have people like me inside that are very, very well-trained in globalization practices. And so it does take understanding the language of the customer. It does take translating your documentation. It does take re-engineering your product user interfaces, right? It does take training your call centers to speak in a different language. It does take training those call center operators in Japan about your product. So it's a very complex orchestra. And it touches every single department on the enterprise. And I think
I was just going to say, as you deal with different entities and guide them in your experience, what are the biggest challenges and roadblocks that they face?
The fact that many companies, and I'm not going to say U.S. companies, many companies do not envision going global from day one. And so they build products that are difficult to take globally. Or they think that their offering is so amazing and so great that it's going to work in other countries. And so if you take the case of Uber, for example, Uber, the car system that picks you up anywhere and it's cheaper than a taxi and all of this stuff. You know, it worked in certain countries, it did not work in China. So you need to learn the local customs. You need to understand, is there another product, another service that already does this? And so it does take a thorough understanding of the local customs, the local offerings. You want to understand who is there already. And to compete with that, you need strong strategies, you need focus, you need goals. And where many, many companies get caught is they wing it. They don't think that globalization needs to be properly orchestrated and organized. And you do need to organize it like if it was any other department.
You write about there are disruptors today impacting this globalization effort. What are those disruptors? How are they impacting?
They're massive disruptors. So, for example, the fact that China, as an example, you know, there's this app called WeChat, where this app alone can do anything for you. You can buy your food through this app. You can get on a date through this app. You can do your Facebook through this app. You can pay your bank statement through your bills through this app. We don't realize this in the States. They, you know, the Chinese were way ahead of us on that aspect. So what they have done is they've disrupted the fact that here in the States, as an example, we have 20 million little apps to do things. But in China, you have one app that does all of this for you. Now, Facebook, you know, the management at Facebook realized that. I don't know if you realize, but all of a sudden through Facebook, you can now start sending money. And so there's some major disruptors happening around the world all day long. I've traveled a lot to Africa where, you know, I sponsor certain schools and families where they have never seen a computer, but boy, do they pay everything through their iPhone. And so there's disruptors happening all around us. And so people that create these little apps or they create these little new startups, they don't realize sometimes that things already are out there and exist. And so investigating your space, is very easy digitally. You can do some research. You need to, before you get all your ideas out there, especially for millennials today, to see there's something out there already in existence, and how can you leapfrog or bypass that?
This, you must know some real good success stories for those who get over that initial apprehension of this. What are those success stories? How successful are these enterprises once they go global?
There's many examples of companies that have pushed products in English around the world. And the minute they realize that there is a whole untapped section of the market, for example, in public sectors, if you want to deal with the public sector in Japan, you will not be able to make deals unless your product is in Japanese. So a success story could be you put your offering in Japanese and market it to the public sector. You will be able to see the uptake very, very quickly.
Anna Schlegel is the author of Truly Global, The Theory and Practice of Bringing Your Company to International Markets. Anna, thanks for being with us on The Opening Bell today.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 5:39 on this Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. Glad to have you along with us. I bet you got a pay raise this past year, even if you didn't notice it. Bankrate.com is just out with a new study. Shows most of Americans, nearly half of Americans, report their pay increased over the past year. Let's bring in Mark Hamrick from Bankrate.com. Mark, good morning. Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you, Steve. Thank you.
So this is a nice deal. As we're all counting our calories, it turns out we can count some extra pennies in our paycheck. What did you find?
Well, that's right. And every month we conduct a survey of Bankrate, which we use to produce the Financial Security Index. And then we ask some wild card questions once we get past just how Americans are feeling, et cetera. And as you say, this time around we queried about the notion of whether folks got a pay raise. It turns out about half of those responding to the survey, and this is within the group of those that are employed, half of the group had a pay raise, half did not. And most of those who did receive a pay raise had got it courtesy of their current employer. 12% found a better paying job. So in some ways, we remain a divided nation economically, and this tells the story about those getting pay raises.
So are there certain industries, Mark, that got pay raises over others? Have you been able to sort of whittle it down to that far yet?
We did not look into industries in particular, but, you know, in looking at this question every month when we get ready for the monthly employment report, and the next one comes out a week from Friday, so it'll be fast forward after the Thanksgiving holiday. We know that there are some areas in our country, and not only geographically speaking, but industry sectors where workers are relatively difficult to come by, and it remains the case that high-tech manufacturing, there are some spot shortages of workers there. It's been the case for a number of years now that construction workers are hard to come by in some areas of the country. And we know that employers, particularly in the so-called STEM professions, that's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, really could use better qualified employees. And in some areas, they're having to essentially bring them in from around the world.
So looking at the study here, it says 37% got a pay raise from their current employer. That seems to show that employers want to hang on to good workers, doesn't it?
Well, that's right. And we asked people what was the reason when they indeed had received a pay increase. 52% of them was performance-based. In other words, they were rewarded for doing a good job. 30% of them got a cost of living increase, 10% had a promotion or new responsibility. So the reasons are varied, but I suppose whoever's on the receiving end of that, the reasons are all positive as well.
Yeah, and I sort of joked at the beginning, you may not have noticed it. There are a lot of folks that I mentioned this to over the last 24 hours, and some of them didn't even notice that they had received a pay raise. Their wages, I guess, have been going up slowly. Is that because it's been going out the other end pretty quickly in terms of taxes and other things that they've had to pay for on the increased side of the ledger?
Well, of course, a bank rate, we're fans of, you know, paying very much close attention to one's own personal finances, and that includes having a budget. And so we encourage people to take a look at their pay stubs, whether it's electronic or paper, see what's coming in, and then perhaps make some spending and savings plans accordingly. But to your question, up until recently, inflation has been relatively benign, and that provides some cover for employers who aren't providing much of a cost of living increase. With what we've been seeing in the bond market since the election, those times might be changing. We'll see.
So how significant could that be? We've already started to see inflation tick up just a little bit. When will it become noticeable, Mark?
Well, it becomes noticeable when essentially it's perceived to be getting out of control, and we're a long way away from that. We know that the Federal Reserve is widely expected to raise interest rates at its mid-December meeting. That'll be here before we know it. And when it does that, if indeed that happens as expected, members of the Federal Open Market Committee will deliver a summary of economic projections, which includes how fast they expect to raise interest rates over the intermediate term or the next 2 or 3 years. Of course, many times they've had to revise those forecasts in the past and essentially ratchet back their expectations, but it'll be very interesting to see what they have to say. But right now, inflation is perceived to be under control, but it is true that interest rates in the bond market have shot up in the last couple of weeks.
So for the other half of the country that didn't get a pay raise, do you have any thoughts or advice about how they might be able to go back to the boss and get one?
Well, you know, it's always better to stay employed with your current employer if you can, from the standpoint of less drama in your life. But if things aren't working, certainly shop around. Use your networks to see what jobs might be available. Some people use holiday parties as a way to network with other companies if they're invited to another holiday party. With respect to your current employer, you know, you try to have a non-threatening conversation along those lines to ask, you know, how your performance is going. And if your performance is perceived to be going well, then, you know, it would not be out of the ordinary to say, well, you know, would it be possible for me to have a pay raise? Or if not, you know, what do I need to do with regard to my job performance to justify one in the next year?
And 12%, these are the number of people that went and found another job when they didn't get, I guess, a pay raise from their current employer. Those are pretty good odds to go out and try to find another job that will pay you what you want. I mean, there are jobs out there. Lots of people are looking for good employees.
Well, that's right. And that was one of our survey questions, or at least the way we broke it down. Those who found a better job tended to be younger workers. And we know this generally to be the case that, for example, millennials are more mobile, whether they're moving across the country or job to job. They also favored the younger millennials, 18 to 25. And then as one gets older, it tended to not be the case that one found a better job or a different job. So, you know, it does seem as if the younger a person is, the more likely they are to be able to get a new job. And the other part, of course, is that their wages are not necessarily as high. And so, you know, they're better qualified from an employer standpoint for more of an entry-level job where there may be more of those available.
Mark, you're more than anybody else that we talk to, you have sort of a good look at all of the things going on in our economy on this Thanksgiving Eve, just almost Thanksgiving Eve. What do we have to be thankful for as a country from your perspective from the economy?
Oh, well, there's a lot, you know, and despite the fact that we, let's say, are a fractious group at times in our country, you know, our economy is the most productive and effective, really, in the world. That is something very much to be thankful for. We have the most robust capital markets, which are tremendous for entrepreneurs that want to build a company up. Let's say some of the fantastic technology companies that have gained a foothold in our country and in our daily lives in recent years. And the fact that, you know, you really can abide by the American dream in our country. If you have an idea, you can bring it to fruition. And, you know, we know plenty of rags to riches stories where people have started with a small idea, whether it's Henry Ford or Mark Zuckerberg, you know, women and minorities are in those groups too, and become wealthy. You know, obviously we can measure wealth in a number of different ways, whether you have a wonderful family or have a lot of dollar bills laying around. But America is still a great place to do business, and that's good for workers.
And for that half of the country that got a pay raise this year, even better so.
Absolutely.
Mark, well, we're thankful for your expertise and insight. Thanks for being with us here on the opening bell, and have a good Thanksgiving.
That's my great pleasure, Steve. Thanks so much, and happy Thanksgiving to all the members of your audience as well.
Thank you very much, Mark. Mark Hamrick of Bankrate.com. You can read more there at Bankrate.com, and you can follow Mark on Twitter. You can find him at Hamrickisms, and we'll spell that out for you here. It's Hamrickisms from Bankrate.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 551 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures up about 48 points. The NASDAQ and S&P futures are a little bit higher as well. Crude oil trading up. Let's get the latest now on commodities and agriculture. Orion Samuelson, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Well, we started the week yesterday with pretty good news for producers of grains and livestock this Thanksgiving week. Soybean futures up more than 2% yesterday, setting a three-week high thanks to strength in Asian oilseed markets and stronger than expected weekly export data. Corn and wheat futures also higher, but trailed the advances in soybeans. At the end of the day, the nearby wheat contract was up 2 cents, the nearby corn contract up 3 3/4, but soybeans, the January bean contract up 27.5 cents. Pretty good day. Now, let's take a look at livestock. There, too, we saw a good rally in lean hog futures, up 4%. Thanks to technical buying and increases in wholesale pork prices. And then there's concern that cold temperatures could slow weight gains, and that would tighten supplies somewhat. Meanwhile, the cattle market yesterday did show a little bit of a gain, and at the end of the day, the nearby cattle contract stood at $109.02, a gain of 62 cents, but feeder cattle ended the day lower, down 82 cents. Tyson Foods, the largest meat processor in the United States, disappointed Wall Street yesterday. Its 2017 profit forecast disappointed investors, and their stock fell nearly 16% during yesterday's trade. Again, markets will be closed Thanksgiving Day until noon Friday. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a great day as well. On the Associated Bank WGN market calendar for this Tuesday, November 22nd, 2016. Not much to report this morning. The National Association of Realtors releases its existing home sales for October later today. Demand for homes has been solid, but supply has been weak as a solid job market and low mortgage rates have brought a lot of buyers into the market. Still, despite the shortage of properties for sale, existing home sales increased in September. So we'll see what those numbers are. Existing home sales for October a little bit later on this morning.